Beer, Cheese, and Murder is a true crime podcast about Wisconsin from Wisconsin. Due to the nature of true crime, this podcast contains explicit and graphic content which may not be suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Beer, Cheese, and Murder. I'm Erica, and today joining me are
Bonnie,
Dina,
Jill,
and Terry.
All right, Jill, what are you drinking and snacking on today?
All right, so for my drink, I found it's called Miss Mary's Premium Paloma Mix, and it says fresh squeezed elixir. And for those of us who don't know what Paloma is, because I did not, it's like a grapefruit drink.
Oh, yeah.
This thing is so delicious. So let me first cite the Wisconsinism for it, or the Wisconsin part of it. It's distributed by Miss Mary's Mix Incorporated out of Port Washington, Wisconsin. MissMary'sMix.com. But so it says a traditional Paloma is two parts Paloma mix with one part premium tequila and a splash of club soda. Shake, pour, adore. I didn't really feel like tequila tonight, and so it had a few other different recipes on here. So I am actually doing a Paloma press, which is vodka, Paloma mix, and club soda. And it is amazingly refreshing. Like, this might be my new go-to like summer outside drink.
Yeah.
It's really delicious.
Does it have some sweetness to it? Because Palomas, when I've had them and not liked them, it's because there's no sweetness to the grapefruit juice. But if they've got a little bit of sweetness, then I really like Palomas. So how's the mix?
Well, do you like grapefruit juice?
I love like grapefruit
juice.
Like
if you would buy it.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
this to me tastes exactly like the grapefruit juice that I used to drink all the time.
Okay.
I think it's delicious.
All right.
I don't think it's tart, but it's not like sweet. It's like spot on. But I did the press. So
excellent.
And then for eats, I had seen in the Sendix ad a couple of weeks ago, this hummus with garlic, and I think they have other flavors too. And it's from the Water Street Deli out of Eau Claire. And they're located at 628 Water Street, hence the Water Street Deli and Grocery LLC. In Eau Claire. And if I would have been thinking, I would have picked up my veggies from the Greendale's Farmer's Market last Saturday, but I was not thinking. So I'm having pita chips.
Still sounds yummy.
Yeah, it does. Well, and I was thinking too with that Paloma press is that with it, I mean, for those that are listening, currently as we're recording, it's like 90 degrees outside for about the third day in a row.
Yes.
So it's humid. Yeah. So it's like hot and
very refreshing.
Yeah. So,
and I'm the only one sitting outside tonight. I see.
I just got back from my walk. So I was outside.
Yeah. I start outside. I feel like I'm actually getting that much sun, but I feel like I am getting pretty good tan. But as soon as the kids get home, when it's nice like this, they just want to play outside. So we just go straight outside and I am out there with them to keep an eye on them. And, you know, we'll be out there for 2-3 hours before we come in at the end of the night. So
my neighborhood is too loud. I've got a yappy dog across the street right now. Even when it's nice outside and I have the windows open, I always end up having to close them when we record because it's just too loud living in the city to record and not have the background music. music, background noise.
Music to then, your ears.
Right.
Barking I did, dogs. Take a picture and send it to Erica of the Miss Mary's mix and the other recipes that they had with the bottle I bought. Oh, and I had gone to World Market the other night, haven't been there in like probably a year.
I haven't been there.
That's where I found this. That's where I found this. At World Market.
They always had a nice selection there. I just haven't been there.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knew? Yeah. And it was on clearance. So it was half price. So I'm like, score. I'll get a few of these. It's Wisconsin. I can do it for the podcast.
Miss Mary's, I'm sure, has a Bloody Mary mix too.
Oh, they do. Others. I've used it in a previous podcast.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had the Gary's, and Gary's has different ones too. They've got different mixes for
cocktails. So the Miss Mary's Bloody Mary mix is what I had sent to when my goddaughter was in the accident down in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
And I sent the care package to the police officers down there. I had several bottles of Miss Mary's because I wanted to do a Wisconsin type
care. You probably don't know what to do with it down there considering Dina's experience. Well, and
that I said it's a Wisconsin tradition. Try it.
You probably should have sent them a recipe and what to put in it.
Yeah, right.
Take old fashioned recipe and mix and all that.
So. Yeah. So yeah, but a local Wisconsin popular distribution, I guess you would say.
Yeah. All right. So I am drinking a beer. I'm drinking, it's called Johnny Blood Red. It's an Irish style red ale from Titletown Brewing Company out of Green Bay, Wisconsin. And it's about 6% ABV. Yes.
Gotta be Green Bay.
Packers, Titletown.
Yep.
Green Bay. Yeah.
You never heard that? Well, you are the one from Illinois. So I guess we'll cut you some slack.
Yeah. And so it says rich caramel malts and a touch of roasted barley create the distinctive flavor of this Irish style red ale. Silver medalist Irish style red ale from 2015 Great America Beer Festival. So it's pretty good. Can't complain. Something different. And then I already ate my snack, but my snack was garlic and dill cheddar cheese curds from Hennings, Wisconsin Cheese, which is out of Keel, Wisconsin.
Hey, I know that area.
Mm-hmm. And on their website, it says a family tradition since 1914, whether you're looking for a specialty cheese, a block of the finest cheddar, or a 12,000 pound mammoth wheel, you've come to the right place. Hennings Wisconsin Cheese is a fourth generation family owned cheese factory based in rural Keel, Wisconsin, that features an on-site cheese store and museum. Hennings offers a wide variety of cheese, including cheddars and Colbys that have won many national and world awards. Hennings is one of the last Wisconsin cheese factories making mammoth wheels and June daisies, aka hoop cheese. So that's
buy a mammoth wheel.
Interesting. I don't know. But actually, usually what I guess cheese curds is one of the things that I often get for Hennings cheese. But they also make really good matzo whips. So the kids really like those. Mm. So I'll get those also. But yeah, so tried to do something a little bit different than the standard, white or yellow cheddar cheese curds. We got some garlic and dill cheese curds. Don't really taste the dill so much, but definitely taste the garlic, which I like garlic, so it's all good.
Excellent. Go make out with Sean later and
right. All of them. We're past that point in the relationship, Dina.
Married and kids, we don't make out anymore.
We don't worry about garlic or onions. Oh, man. All right.
She'll get into bed and he'll be like,
go brush your teeth. Gosh.
He falls asleep on the couch like every night. And then he sometimes will come to bed, but it's like every time he comes to bed, then one of the kids without fail will wake up and come into bed that night. And then he can't handle the kids tossing and turning, so then he'll go back out to the couch. And if he stays out on the couch, then the kids don't come to bed. It's like, can't win. Oh man. But no, we actually have
Jill is frozen in a really weird pose.
Oh man.
You're back up,
am Jill. I still frozen?
No.
No.
Oh, you're my frozen. Gosh. You're like, am I back?
Yeah, you're fine now.
Oh.
Oh.
All right. So we'll see if you guys can catch a theme for this episode. So, if my Wisco fact, I have a fact about Green Bay, Wisconsin. So I specifically searched for facts about Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Title town, Terry.
Yes. And I ended up finding an article on mentalfloss.com by Stacy Conrad, and it's titled 10 Facts About Green Bay, aka the Toilet Paper Capital of the World. And I was just like, hold the phone. I think that's my fact. I'm like, I didn't know that.
I would not have thought that.
Yeah. All the paper factory, the paper mills.
Well, that's actually not why, though.
I thought the paper mills were basically in Appleton.
Yeah.
They also have paper mills up in Hayward-ish area, Wisconsin. So I remember driving up there as a kid, and you can always smell it. Because it's a distinct smell. But yeah, so this is, it's apparently one of its nicknames is the toilet paper capital of the world. So as my beer is Titletown Brewing Company, Titletown USA is one of their nicknames as well. And the author of the article says it has a better ring to it than toilet paper capital of the world, but both are nicknames for the town. Titletown, obviously, because the Packers lay claim to 12 NFL titles. The other nickname is because Northern Tissue, a precursor to Quilted Northern, invented the first splinter-free paper in the plant there.
Oh, my gosh. Splinter-free. What year would that be? Do we know?
I'd have to look that one up. Okay, it wasn't in the article.
Wow. But
yes, so toilet paper used to have splinters. And for all our listeners, you can thank Wisconsin for that no longer being the case.
That is great. Wow. Totally learned something. Yes.
Yeah. And there were obviously other facts within the article, but I'm actually going to hold on to those and save those for future episodes because I have a feeling there will be more cases located in this area. So if you hadn't picked up on it, and how I sometimes like to do this, because our fact is Green Bay and my beer is out of Green Bay, our case is out of Green Bay, Wisconsin.
I'm really smart. I figured that out already.
All right. Who is ready to jump into the case?
Me.
I am. All right. We already know where this takes place, but as a reminder for the listeners before we jump into this, and they're wondering in about 5 minutes, where is this again? It is Green Bay, Wisconsin. On May 20th, 2016, 35-year-old Douglas Dietry and his 31-year-old girlfriend, Nicole Vanderhayden, arranged for a night out with friends.
I recognize her name.
Yes, this is actually a case that Dina recommended.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. As Nicole was a mother of three children, including a six-month-old son whom she shared with Doug, as well as two older children from a previous relationship. These arrangements included a babysitter. And I did read somewhere that I believe the older children were actually spending the weekend with their dad, who was an ex-husband to Nicole. So the babysitter would have been for the 6-month-old. Nights out with friends were probably few and far between, having 3 young children. So the two of them were planning on letting loose and having some fun. They met up with their friends for a concert at a Green Bay, Wisconsin bar called The Watering Hole. And after the concert, Nicole continued on to another bar called The Sardine Can, while Doug stayed behind at The Watering Hole with a friend of his named Greg. So,
well, what kind of a date is that?
Yeah.
Well, I think Nicole was wondering the same thing.
Yeah, okay. Are they married or just dating?
They're boyfriend, girlfriend. So I don't believe they were engaged or married at this time, but they were living together.
They that's were the married
they
couple.
They had a child.
Yep, yes. They had a 6-month-old. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, because I was going to say that's called the married couple date. Where you start off together and then, I'll be over here. Okay, see you later.
I haven't been on one of those yet.
Either. Well, yeah, I guess I really haven't either.
Probably not a good sign. But yes, as you were wondering, what kind of date is that? I think Nicole was thinking the same thing. So Doug's decision to stay behind did upset her. And even though they were separated, she was angrily texting him to let him know just how upset she was. So via text message, she called him abusive and controlling, and she accused him of cheating on her. So, I mean, you got to figure they're drinking. They both probably consumed quite a bit. So
he pissed her off.
The dramatics are probably a little high. Their fun night out was not so fun anymore. But despite her anger with Doug, there were actually surveillance footage, which will come into play later on as we find out why. But there was surveillance footage that they did recover of Nicole at the bar, and she was having a good time with her friends. So even though she was really pissed off at Doug, she was still letting loose, as was the original plan, and having fun with her friends. However, the longer Doug waited to catch up with Nicole and their friends, the more frustrated and upset Nicole became. And so she sent more angry text messages to him. So he, at one point, did respond to these messages and said that he would meet up with them at the Sardine Can, which is the bar that she was at, soon. But when she tried to call him, he didn't answer the phone. So she had a friend that she was with call him, and then he did answer. So she,
not good.
Not wise, man.
So that really pissed her off. Nicole was so upset at this that she actually left the bar. She's like, that's it, I'm done. Night over, I'm out. A friend actually kind of like walked after her and tried to talk her back into returning to the bar, but she refused. Her friends watched her walk down the street, talking on her cell phone. She turned left, and that was the last time they saw her. Doug and Greg eventually made their sorry asses to the Sardine Can, but it was after Nicole had left. And seemingly unbothered by Nicole's departure, Doug and Greg enjoyed a few drinks before they too headed out for the evening.
He's like, she's already pissed, so what the hell?
Yeah, I mean,
literally.
I'm gonna go home and get yelled at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a guy response.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to, I'm going to fix this.
Right, yeah, right.
Exactly. She's already pissed, so I may as well just stay out. I'm gonna fight either way.
Right, yeah, very true.
That's what we thought.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my mentality too, I'm just saying.
Hindsight's 2020. But the next day, which was a Sunday, May 21st, around 4:30 p.m., Douglas Dietrich made a call to the non-emergency phone line for the police station in Ledgeview, Wisconsin, to report Nicole missing.
What time did you say? The next morning, about 10?
No, 4:30 p.m.
Oh, all day.
Yep.
Wow. He waited all day. Okay.
Yeah.
So he got home, paid off the babysitter.
Okay. Yep.
Drunk, knowing that she's pissed, was just like, screw it, whatever.
Yeah. So he told police about Nicole going out the night before, telling them that they had gotten separated during the night. So kind of painting a more rosy picture of He noted that Nicole wasn't home when he arrived home, but he had assumed she had stayed with a friend. So, you know, initially, yes, okay, she's not home. She's pissed off. Not that he told the police that, but maybe she just decided to crash with a friend and like.
But they have a baby as a mother. That's the thing.
That's a wild card. I mean, but again, sometimes guys are a bit clueless about those kinds of things. So may have seemed like a reasonable thing to him, but I don't think any mother, for the most part, would not return home to their 6-month-old. And police did also think it odd that Doug had waited so long to report her missing, especially as it would be, as we've noted, unusual for her not to return home to her kids, especially a 6-month-old baby.
Right.
It wasn't until they questioned him further that the full picture of their fun night out began to emerge. So that's when they started to understand, okay, they got into a fight. He's not nearly as innocent in this situation as he maybe wants to believe that he is. But police had more than just the delay in the missing persons report that made them suspicious of Doug Dietrich. As unbeknownst to Doug, another report had come in earlier that same day.
Wait, another report?
Not a missing persons report, but there was a different report that had come into the police station where what he was reporting kind of really raised a flag and was on their radar. So there is something else that they were aware of that he wasn't that made them more suspicious of him.
Okay.
A farmer in Green Bay made an unexpected and horrifying discovery earlier in the day that Sunday. And that discovery was the body of a dead woman.
The body of
a woman.
A dead woman.
Yes. Yes.
A dead body. The body was off in a wooded area, not visible from the road. It was a blonde woman laying face down who appeared to be in her 30s. And Nicole was blonde. There were no identifying marks on the body or obvious cause of death from that position. So with her laying face down, they couldn't really tell what had happened. Though the police noted she was still wearing a pink club wristband, socks, and had what appeared to be a shoe mark on her back.
Stepped on her or kicked her?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And it should be noted that when I say she was wearing a pink club wristband and socks, that is all she was
wearing. That's it. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Aside from that, she was nude.
Yeah, I did not pick up on that.
Yeah. So obviously after taking note of the scene as it was and her placement and what it all looked like, they rolled the body over. And quote, "The extent of injuries that she suffered were pretty horrific," said Brown County Sheriff Sergeant Richard Lopnow. "There was trauma to her neck that would indicate possible strangulation in addition to lacerations and bruising throughout her body. Her fingernails were damaged, indicative of defensive wounds. That tells us she was fighting for her life."
Ugh. Just like the thought of it is just so disturbing. I can't imagine the effort that you put forth when you're getting attacked, you know?
Yeah. police were actually still at the scene when the call from Doug Dietrich came in, causing them to immediately go to his home, which was also the home that he shared with Nicole, to question him. So, I mean, it was very fresh, and they were literally just there when he then called in to report her missing. And so then to now they're thinking, okay, this is probably her, because how often are you going to have a dead body and a missing person on the same day, mm-hmm. especially when the missing person matches the description of the body that was found? And then to further question him and find out that their night out ended pretty bad with them on bad terms and her being really pissed off and there was alcohol involved, you know, definitely a lot of red flags going on. And it did ultimately turn out that the body was in fact identified as Nicole Vanderhaeden. So with the identification of Nicole, it kicked off a whole new level of investigation. When police searched Nicole's house, a number of items were of interest to them. They found a pair of Air Jordans, which appeared to have marks, smudges, and blood on them. So they took them to be tested for DNA. They were of particular interest to them as the marks on Nicole's body indicated that she had been stamped on when she was lying on the ground. And the pattern on the sole of the shoes looks similar to the marks on her body. I mean, that's just that type of action to a human body tells you just how much they don't view that person as a person.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
And anger that they have going on.
Just stomp on the body like that.
Right.
They also noted that there was what appeared to be blood on the floor of the garage and in Nicole's car, which led them to believe that Nicole was killed when she got home and her body was transported to the farm field in her own vehicle.
Oh
my gosh. Oh. Okay.
2 days after Nicole's body was found, her neighbor told police that they found items that may be of interest to them. According to the neighbor, they found a charging cord and clumps of blonde hair in the garden of their home. Mm-hmm. The hair had blood on it, and there was also blood on the neighbor's driveway.
Eek.
Police found hairs in the blood and hairpins and two further pieces of wire in the yard.
So she made it home.
So she was at least in proximity of her home. Yeah. So it appeared that the attack on her actually occurred in her neighbor's yard. Mm. Police also found Nicole's clothing. The outfit she wore on the night out that Saturday, May 20th, was found covered in dirt and blood along a highway ramp less than 2 miles from where her body was found. And along with her clothes was her purse and cell phone.
I don't know about this Doug.
Right. Mm-hmm. Neither did the police. All of the evidence, along with the argument between Doug and Nicole the night before, appeared to paint a pretty damning picture.
For sure.
Yeah. Unsurprisingly, Doug was arrested and held while DNA testing was performed to compare his DNA to the DNA samples left behind on Nicole's body and clothing. Investigators fully believe that they had solved the case. So they were like, slam dunk, this is pretty easy, A to B to C, mm-hmm. just waiting for the lab results to prove us right, prove out the theory, and close it up.
And the lab results would be from those smudges of blood on the Air Jordans that were found at the house.
Yeah, so I think it's like any, his DNA, I think there was also DNA found on her socks. On her body, And then also to the shoes, proving that that was in fact blood, and having that match up to her to kind of put him at the scene of the crime, prove that those are the shoes that were used to put the marks on her, kind of connecting all the dots to kind of prove it out. However,
oh my gosh,
the DNA testing. So the DNA testing came back without a match. Their murderer was actually an unidentified male.
Wow.
Not Doug.
Wow. That's crazy. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even I thought that was going to be a slam dunk.
All evidence points to him, too.
But it all seems to have been a bit of a red herring. So all of the evidence that they previously found that they thought like really looked bad, it's not just that the DNA didn't match on the body. In fact, that evidence, the seemingly damning evidence at the house, wasn't actually tied to the crime either. They were able to determine that Nicole's car had actually never left the garage during the time frame of the crime, so it was not used to transport her body. And what they thought was blood on the car wasn't. The blood on the garage floor wasn't human blood. So it was blood, but not human blood. And the blood on the tennis shoes was human blood, but it wasn't Nicole's blood. So maybe somebody got a bloody nose or who knows what.
Yeah.
So none of that stuff that seemed like, you know, everything seemed like it tied perfectly to the crime, and none of it was actually connected through one means or another.
Well, I bet Doug is very thankful for DNA tests.
Right.
Well, and also a police department that cares and follows evidence.
Followed through. Yeah.
And police even checked his Fitbit data and found that he moved all of 12 steps during the time of the crime, like the window of opportunity. Okay. Which was like a 3-hour window. Fitbit
could protect us.
Right.
Yeah. Who knew your Fitbit?
Yeah, it was like a 3-hour window, and he moved like 12 steps. So
he was sitting at the bar.
Yeah, he couldn't possibly have committed the crime.
They do a lot of the Fitbit and like follow your phone and all sorts of stuff. It's amazing the electronics. Even if you turn off your location, they can track you through your Wi-Fi. Like if it automatically connects to Wi-Fi somewhere, they'll get your phone, even if your location is off. And your Fitbit, they can tell.
Kind of like, wild, really.
Yeah, your heart rate, if your heart rate goes up and how many of your steps you're taking and all of that. It's crazy. Fitbit will save me if anyone ever says that I murdered somebody, because they'll be like, this lazy chick did 2,900 steps that day. She couldn't have done anything.
Oh, man. So the way I look at it, Douglas Dietrich certainly wasn't winning Boyfriend of the Year award.
Yeah, I think we already knew that.
But he wasn't a killer. He wasn't a killer. And he was cleared for the murder of Nicole Vanderhaeden. However, that left this police department with a murdered young mother and an unidentified killer on the loose. So they had to work fast. And investigators initially feared that this case may become a cold case, with their only lead being completely proven wrong. But the crime scene techs were on their A game and had not only collected a large enough DNA sample to submit to the national database, but they actually followed through on doing so. So even though they thought they had their man, they still did their due diligence and submitted it to the national database. And just 3 months later, they had a match. The DNA. I mean, and it seems, I still feel like 3 months later, holy crap, that's a long time to wait. But it's like everything takes so long for processing. I feel like 3 months later is probably in reality a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Sadly. So that DNA sample identified their killer as George Stephen Birch. Birch hailed from Virginia, but had recently moved to Wisconsin. And when he was identified through the DNA match, he had actually already been under investigation for a different incident.
Eek.
In Wisconsin?
Yes. Which was a possible involvement involving an incident around a vehicle that he had a connection to. And that incident was a stolen vehicle report, a vehicle fire, and a possible hit and run.
Oh, geez.
What was the last thing? A possible what?
Hit and run.
Oh, my gosh.
But that's kind of a far cry from murder.
Right.
Right. But it happened. I think it was honestly just a coincidence that he was being investigated, but it greatly helped the case, which we will get into. And it actually occurred very close to the time frame of when the murder of Nicole took place. So he actually was questioned by police in regards to the vehicle crime on June 8th of 2016. So just like 2-3 weeks later, he was being investigated for this other incident. So a similar time frame. And during his interview related to the car, so this is kind of off topic to the murder, but it all comes back. So during his interview, Birch told police that he was at a bar during the time that the car was in the hit and run. And he also stated that he had been texting a woman all night. So he kind of was using that as his alibi for basically saying, I was not involved in this hit and run. It wasn't me because I was at this bar and I was texting somebody. So to corroborate his story, police asked if they could look at his text messages on his phone, to which Birch consented. And he even signed a consent form giving them permission to look at his phone. And so to get the information and data off of his phone, they actually just took a download, because the way that they explained it to him was that it'd be a lot easier to just download all this information and then review it versus have to sift through it, take a bunch of pictures and blah, 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 and do it that way. And he signed the consent form. He's like, go ahead, take the data, download it. And that downloaded data was still on file with the police department months later, when Birch's DNA then tied him to Nicole's murder.
Wow. Lots of luck here.
Right.
Well, so so unless you voluntarily give your DNA, like say, I remember a bunch of other cases that you've talked about where they, hey, can all the males in this community step forward and we'll test your DNA, you know, let's clear you. So if you're not volunteering it, the only other way they have it on file is if you're like in jail or under investigation, right?
They knew that he was from Virginia. So when they identified him, they had to investigate to find that he had recently relocated to Wisconsin. So I think that his DNA was actually on file related to something that must have happened in Virginia. So that was the information that they had on file for him. So he happened to be in the system for some prior offense, and then he coincidentally happened to be involved in this vehicle thing right around the same time that she was murdered. And as a means of getting a alibi for that crime, he gave police access to his phone and allowed them to download all that data. So now that his DNA connects him to Nicole's crime, they're like, oh, hey, look, we've got all this phone data. Let's see what we can learn about that around the time when Nicole's murdered.
Awesome.
Yeah. So
you gotta love dumb criminals thinking that they're smarter than the cops.
Exactly. Well,
and technology, it's kind of incredible. So
yeah.
Through the data from Birch's phone, police were able to see where Birch was the night of May 20th when Nicole went missing. GPS data placed him at a bar called Richard Cranium's, which was about a half mile away from the sardine can.
Oh my gosh, Richard Cranium's.
Dickhead.
You had some interesting bar names. In
I love it. Richard Cranium's.
Yes. Dickheads. So he was at the bar Richard Cranium's about a half mile away from the sardine can, which is the bar where Nicole was last seen. After leaving Richard Cranium's around 2:30 a.m., GPS puts him at Nicole's house, where he stayed from around 3:01 a.m. to about 3:52 a.m.
Wait, what? They were at her house together?
He was at her house. So they just looked to see where
GPS the pings are coming. Okay.
And remember, the crime scene appeared to be not necessarily her house, but in
the neighbor's house.
Area. And he was there for about 51 minutes. So from 3:01 a.m. until 3:52, which is right in the window of when they had identified the crime occurring. GPS then showed him going to the farm field where Nicole's body was found just after 4 a.m.
Try explaining that one away.
Yeah.
Probably just randomly go into a farm field where a dead body happens.
Middle of the night.
After being at her house.
Yeah.
And prior to that, in the area of where she was last seen. And then after the GPS placed him at the farm field, it actually showed him in the location where Nicole's clothing and belongings were discarded.
That'd be a major coincidence if it.
Right. There's no way.
So, like, how do you just happen to be at every single major location associated with this crime at the right time?
Yeah. He really left the trail.
Right.
And I don't think he realized it because it wasn't the standard, like, Google or like GPS location in your phone. They found like a Gmail account and they were able to get his GPS locations through like the Gmail account or something like that. It's very something I would never even think about.
He left a digital trail and he gave him access to it.
It's crazy. Wow. Yeah. And after that, he went home. And so, well, all the other evidence that appeared to be damning evidence was disproven. This is actually damning evidence. Not surprisingly, again, George Birch was arrested and charged with first degree intentional homicide. But despite the evidence, he pled not guilty. And so the case went to trial.
Waste everyone's time and money.
George Birch and his defense team did their best to promote reasonable doubt by putting Doug and his rocky relationship with Nicole on trial. And as we know, it was far from perfect, but the evidence, so they may not have had a good relationship, and sure, he certainly makes a great, you know, suspect, but the evidence did not point to him. And police actually noted that his reaction at learning that the body found in the farm field was Nicole's appeared to be genuine. So even though they didn't have the best relationship and their last exchange was heated and not pleasant, according to police, he pretty much lost it. He was crying, sobbing, pretty much hyperventilating. So he was devastated.
Oh, right. I mean, could you imagine that, like, that was how their last exchange or their last night together?
He ignored the text messages and then
angry and fighting. Yeah. Oh.
And
having everything happening outside while you're sleeping.
Yeah. 6-month old.
Right.
My 6 month old son was right there, not far away.
Yeah.
George Birch, on the other hand, had a mountain of evidence against him. His DNA was found on the victim. GPS placed him near her last known location, her house, which was the crime scene, the location of her body, and the location of where her clothing and other belongings were dumped. And he also seemed to have quite the fascination with Nicole's case, as his internet search history showed 64 viewings of news related to Nicole.
Oh my God.
So, had to see what was being figured out by them police.
Yeah.
How hot on my trail are they? It was the prosecution's case that George drove Nicole to her house, and he did so because he expected her to have sex with him. But when she rejected his advances, he raped her, beat her, and strangled her to death with a charging cord. So the charging cord that was found in the neighbor's yard was actually used to strangle her.
And he's a big dude. 6'7".
Holy shit.
Yeah, like, he's a big dude.
Wow.
So this is essentially based on the evidence, this is what the prosecution believes led to the crime. So it was their case that Nicole tried to get away and make it to the safety of her house, because her house, what everybody views as a sanctuary and as safety, as a place of safety, was right there. She could probably see it. It was so close, and yet she couldn't get there, and she fought like hell. The defensive wounds prove that she fought, and especially probably the knowledge that her young son was in that house. Like, there's even that need of, like, I need to get myself safe, and then I need to keep him safe. But as soon as she ran towards her house, George caught up with her and beat her on the driveway. So there was, I think it'd be like the neighbor's driveway, because they said that they found blood in the neighbor's driveway. And prosecution told the jury that Nicole's injuries indicated that she was slammed on the ground repeatedly and stamped on and kicked multiple times.
Wow.
By a 6'7" piece of shit.
Yeah.
He knew he was killing her. You don't do all that expecting somebody to live through it.
Yeah.
He like had to have just lost it. Like a rage. Yeah.
And I don't think she was trying to get into her house. I think she was trying to get away from her house. Yeah. She didn't want him near her son. Which is why it was the neighbor's house.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point. Because if, they went inside, then, or if he and got her, inside with her, then
he wouldn't be able to. Yeah. Well, that and there was, I think, understandably, it wouldn't have just been her son. It would be the babysitter, too.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and maybe she thought her neighbors could help.
Could be.
Yeah.
The court heard that George then drove her body to the farm field and left her body there before driving home. On his way home, he threw her belongings out of his car window. Prosecutor showed the jury photos of George hours after he killed Nicole. And the reason why this was kind of impactful is because those pictures showed that he had gone fishing with a friend and was smiling and laughing.
Yeah. Fishing with his buddy the next day.
Wow.
Just carried on as if nothing happened, as if he didn't just snuff the life out of somebody.
Hours prior.
Yeah.
The medical examiner who carried out the autopsy testified and told the court that Nicole was strangled and beaten to death, and that there were 241 injuries to her body.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
On the flip side, the defense claim that Douglas was the real killer. It was their case that he saw Nicole and George outside his house having consensual sex in George's car. It was their case that Douglas flew into a rage and killed Nicole. According to George, he met her at the bar Richard Cranium's, and after a flirtatious night and at closing time, around 2:30 a.m., he offered to drive her home. She agreed, and he drove the 8 miles to her house. When they pulled up across from her house, they continued talking and then began kissing, which led them to being intimate in the backseat. According to George, they had sex in the back of his car. Nicole was lying on the back seat and he was standing with the rear passenger door open. George claimed that he was knocked out by someone and woke up on the ground to find Douglas standing over him with a gun. According to George, Nicole was already dead at that point and that Douglas must have killed her. He claimed that Douglas threatened him at gunpoint and ordered him to put Nicole's body in his car and drive to the field and dump her body in a ditch. He was told that when they were at the field, and when they were at the field, he lunged at Douglas and knocked him over and managed to get away from him and drove off. He's noticed that Nicole's clothing and belongings were still in his car, so he threw them out the window on his way home.
I mean, at least he's creative, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It ties up with the GPS data. Like, how do I explain this really?
Right? Yeah.
Despite Birch's best efforts at storytelling and what a tale he spun, the jury decided with the actual evidence, and after 3 hours of deliberation, they found George Birch guilty of first-degree murder.
Hell yes.
Good.
Does anyone, or did anyone used to watch The Practice? I know Dina and I did.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
I did when it first started.
Okay. Do you remember the Plan B? Like the lawyer's defense, it was always Plan B, where they would raise like another suspect, like exactly like this case, and like just try and create that doubt in the jury's mind.
Well, it's kind of like Matlock, only on Matlock, there actually was a different person that did it.
I do like me some Matlock. 5 years old watching Matlock.
I liked Matlock because he was a good guy.
I like Matlock. I like some Matlock.
Yeah, me too.
That's why Abraham Lincoln was also my favorite president.
So
why?
Because he was a lawyer before he became president, and he actually refused, at least supposedly what I remember from when I was a kid, was that he refused to take on cases if he thought the defendant was guilty.
I wish every lawyer did that.
Exactly. That's what I'm right? saying.
There's a thought.
That's what I, you know, that's
Everybody's
what I appreciate. That's
right
why
to
I wanted to be
trial people.
I just
Even
love
pieces
the
of shit.
Ethics. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, Matlock and Abraham Lincoln, those are my heroes.
So I just was looking up Birch, the article real quick. And yeah, so he's 6'7", 250 pounds.
Wow.
So big guy. And his reasoning why he made up this whole story and why he didn't go to the cops after Dietrich apparently killed this woman, right. You know, knocked him out, did all of this stuff, is because he was on probation after serving time for grand larceny in Virginia, and he wasn't supposed to be in Wisconsin.
But he relocated to Wisconsin. He wasn't right. visiting.
So he's doing, yeah. He was afraid of going back to jail. That's why he didn't tell the cops.
Oh, never mind.
Maybe didn't we tell him that he killed people. Somebody.
Guy is not a very good liar.
Man, okay. So he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, which I believe is the harshest sentence possible without the death penalty.
Yep.
Birch attempted to appeal his conviction on the basis that his Fourth Amendment rights had been violated by the use of the cell phone data being admissible in court.
He gave it to them.
For a different case.
But still, he gave it to them.
Yeah, so he actually, yeah. I mean, so he made the appeal to the Supreme Court, and in a 4-3 decision, the Supreme Court denied the appeal and upheld Birch's conviction. But that still means there were 3 judges that sided with him. So the official quote from the justices was, "We conclude that even if some constitutional defect attended either the initial download or subsequent accessing of the cell phone data, there was no law enforcement misconduct that would warrant exclusion of that data."
Good. So. The last thing you want is police misconduct.
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah.
And as far as I can tell, the police really did a good job on this.
Yeah.
They really followed it through because a lot of times when you think you've got your suspect, that's kind of where it ends. And you look for evidence to prove that this person is it. Even when they collected evidence that appeared to prove that it was, when the actual analysis of it proved that it wasn't, they still kept with it and followed it until, you know, the obvious suspect was proven out and they found the right guy.
It might help that Brown County and Green Bay are a smaller area with probably not nearly as many murders happening, so they are going to be very, very thorough when they come across one, because they don't want to end up being one of those places that isn't solving crimes, you know, big crimes when they happen.
I would say yes and no at the same time, because I feel like it really depends on the ethics and the quality of the people that you have working there, because in some cases in small towns, when they don't have the resources that like bigger cities do, they may just want to find the easy answer and close it.
That's true.
So I don't know. Either way, I think regardless, they did a good job in this case. And luckily they found the right guy and they followed the evidence. And he is, because his appeal was not successful, he is continuing to serve his sentence.
Good. Is he in, do we know where he's sent, where he's serving his time?
I'd have to look that information up.
I was just curious.
My guess is he's probably Wisconsin. I can't imagine a reason why he would be transferred out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so either. I just wondered if what prison he's in.
Yeah.
Isn't there a prison right in Green Bay?
Yeah, but they're not always stationed.
Right.
They oftentimes are sent elsewhere. And based on his crime, he might have been sent to a more high
security.
So maybe he's at the prison same somewhere. Prison as Chris Watts, and he can beat the crap out of
right him. He's in Dodge County, so I don't know.
Chris Watts is a pile of shit, so
right,
that's all I will say on that matter.
Apparently
he likes the publicity, so we won't give him any. All right, so who's ready for a high note?
I am.
Yes.
All right, so again, this is Green Bay centric, as was the rest of this episode, and we are keeping with the highlight of festivals, and so I'm going to talk about Chalk Fest.
Chalk?
Chalk Fest.
So this is, it occurs on Saturday, August 13th of 2022 this year. From 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., it will take place at the Green Bay Croc Center in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And it says, this is this family, oh my gosh, I can't even speak. It's like right here in front of me. Okay. This free family-friendly community arts event features beautiful chalk art creations, local arts and crafts vendors, local food trucks, and lots of family fun.
Oh, so they're probably those like really cool three-dimensional chalk drawings and stuff.
I just saw that somewhere. Yeah,
those are really cool.
Those are incredible.
Yeah, so I think it's like an art showcase along with like craft vendors, food trucks, and it just seems like it's going to be a whole lot of fun. So
very cool.
Anybody is interested in that, wants to check out the toilet paper capital of the world?
Splinter free now.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Maybe there's even a nice chalk like picture of a toilet paper.
I'm having a pool party that day, so I can't do it.
Yeah, we're actually going to a slip and slide party, but yeah, no, I think, you know, if anybody's interested in checking out something a little bit unique, and then I always love when they have food trucks. Food trucks are becoming such like a big thing where I work. They're actually trying to do, I think it's monthly. They're trying to do like a food truck day. So they're bringing different food trucks, which is really cool. I haven't partaken in it, but
they have some of the best food.
Yeah, it's usually pretty good. It's a great way to try out, you know, different types of authentic and original food, and it's just great. But yeah, so I thought Chalk Fest sounded like really unique and a lot of fun, so I thought I would bring that as our high note this week.
Highlight. Very cool.
So that is what I had.
Excellent. Good case.
Yep, good case. Yes.
Yeah, it was on TV. It was on apparently a couple different shows.
Yeah.
It was on Dateline and Killer Cases, which is the one that I saw it on.
Yeah, I think there was, I found an article at least on Oxygen. So I assume there is an episode on the Oxygen channel related to it as well. But it's just so crazy how, like, even with the evidence, I can see why the defense tried to put forth, you know, the reasonable doubt with Doug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes you really think about your relationships, people.
But now this poor little child, I mean, who was probably, when was this, 2016?
Yeah.
So got like 5.5 or 6 year old kid without a mom.
Yeah.
At least he has his dad, though.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully he's grown up a little bit since 2016.
Yeah, and hopefully he like kept custody of him or him.
Yeah,
or
right.
Well, and during the trial, I didn't share the details of it, but they, you know, I think they really tried to air out the state of their relationship, and they did share text messages that he had, which I don't know how this was admissible, but they shared text messages that he had sent to his mom like not that long before the murder, to show that it was, you know, how rocky the relationship was, that he was considering having Nicole and the kids move out of the house and you know, stuff like that. But what I take away from that, from this perspective, is that he had a good enough relationship with his mom to be able to share that type of information. So now that he's in a state where he's a single dad, you know, it seems that he has some kind of support system to lean on with his mom.
And it was his house
then. Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There was, I forgot there were two other kids too.
And so my guess is that they're in the custody of their dad because they were the product of a former marriage that Nicole had. And I believe they were with him when the crime actually occurred, which was interesting that they didn't necessarily, I mean, maybe it just didn't, you know, nothing, it didn't seem obvious, but it's interesting that they didn't necessarily investigate him as a potential suspect.
Maybe they did. But if the kids were with him.
Yeah, the current significant other, especially when it wasn't in a good state, was probably the more obvious. So definitely a lot of interesting details, kind of ups and downs, and just got a random guy who people don't even necessarily connect to Wisconsin is the one that did it.
I remember in the show, the people that were, I think that he was staying with, were just this George Birch that he was staying with, were absolutely shocked that he did this, because they're saying what a good guy he was and what a kind person he was and all of this. And they just, and I think the husband or the man that was the guy that he went fishing with the next day and said, no, I never would have known that there was anything wrong with him at all, because he was having a good time, and which speaks volumes for this guy being a psychopath. Yeah, that he's not even bothered by what he just did.
Yeah, those are scary ones. Not everyone looks like the demented leprechaun.
Right.
You know, well, like, oh, creepy, get away.
Anytime I hear something like that about somebody that did something horrific like that, I think of Ted Bundy. I'm like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
That's like, yeah. That, he's just, and I
just goes on with life, just a day like any other day.
They just have two faces. It's just crazy.
They can compartmentalize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, I do think that we are just about due for, you know, we don't have to do it exactly the same frequency. So, but I think we'll probably want to do another Wisco crime beat coming up.
Kayla, it's all on Kayla now.
Right.
The rest of us have done it.
Let's make sure she knows.
Make sure that we tell her that she has to do it. And that's right.
Well, you see her, you tell her.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we're ever going to see Kayla.
Looking for some cases.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I have.
You still have more that you printed out.
I printed out. I do.
Sorry, I just had to throw it in there.
Well, and I do have, I'll look into that one that my friend was talking about from Onalaska. Granted, not a thing that I would want to do, but maybe someone would want to tackle it.
All right. Well, you can always send me information too. But we can talk about that, but just so that, you know, we'll probably do more cases like this. Not necessarily the same content, but, you know, single case where I'll go through it, and probably another Wisco crime beat coming up, but definitely going to keep going, and we're doing pretty good with keeping on track. We've got some cases in the pipeline. So until next time, eat, drink, and be wary. Thank you for listening to Beer, Cheese, and Murder. We would like to also thank the references that make this podcast possible. A full list of references can be found on our website at beercheeseandmurderpodcast.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at beercheeseandmurderpod, where pictures from today's episode are available for your viewing. If you would like to share your feedback, Wisco facts, case suggestions, stories, or just whatever, please email us at contact@beercheeseandmurderpodcast.com. Don't forget to tell your friends, but most importantly, until next time, eat, drink, and be wary.